Hello, friends. Welcome to Read 'Em and Weep. It's me, your host, Sammy. And if you listened to last week's episode, you remember it was kind of a bit of a downer. I took this poker trip and I got wrecked. I played bad and I ran bad and everything was bad. And, you know, on the way home from that poker trip, I was doing a little bit of introspection and I decided that it would be a good idea for me to take a couple weeks off of poker, take a little break. And I think anytime you're feeling negative about being at the table, it's a good idea to take a break. And so I've kind of devoted this time off from poker to do a lot of studying, particularly of tournaments, because I'm going to play the World Series of Poker at the beginning of July. And then also kind of work on my physical fitness, something that I've kind of neglected for the last like 3+ years since I had kids. And, you know, it's really tough just to find time / motivation, that sort of thing. And yeah, I think it's, you know, just overall a very good thing for me because I really haven't taken any sort of legitimate break from poker since the beginning of last year. So almost a year and a half since my first daughter was born. And since then, I've just been like grinding my fucking dick off, right? And it's been great, but it's always good to take a little breather. And I think this is a really good time for it, especially with the series upcoming, etc. And so what that means for this podcast is today's episode, I actually have some hands left over from previous pods that I just wasn't able to get in, and they're all bluffs. So this is going to be a very bluff-heavy episode, and I hope you guys like that. And then next week, I'm going to do a mailbag episode. So I actually have a couple of leftover questions from the previous mailbag episode that I'm going to use, but I could use a few more. So if any of you guys out there have anything you'd like to talk about, any discussion points, any questions, please DM me on Twitter at SammyReedFI, and I will try to get your question into next week's episode. And then 3 weeks from now, that episode, I should have already been back on the tables by then. So we'll be back to business as usual. And yeah, so that's the plan. So enough pussyfooting around, my friends. Let's get into some bluffs. All right, hand one. We're playing 2-5-10 at Stone's Gambling Hall. A pretty good aggressive player under the gun makes it a zombie 20. So a zombie 20 is basically a dead straddle. So this is technically a 2-5 game, right? 2-5, but we're playing a mandatory straddle. So 2-5, 10 in the straddle, and then this good aggressive player makes it a dead 20 blind under the gun. The action folds to a weak player in the cutoff, and he calls the 20. And then it gets to me on the button, and I look down at King 10 offsuit. And I think against a weak player, this is absolutely a hand that you can ISO raise with. I'd ISO raise with much worse, and I have. But in this particular spot, I decide to overlimp for two reasons. First off, I'm on the button. And so because I want to play a really wide range on the button, I'm going to do a lot of flatting. I don't necessarily need to raise to quote unquote buy position. And then secondly, the player in the zombie 20 is an aggressive player. And so my thought is that if he sees this weak player limp in the cutoff and then sees me raise on the button, he's going to read that as weak. He's going to think that I have a pretty wide range, which I will. And so he's going to attack that with a lot of three bets. And I'm going to have to fold my hand to a three bet because King 10 offsuit is a pretty shitty hand to defend three bets against. So I decide to not give him the option to do that. And I overlimp on the button. The $10 straddle calls, and the guy in the $20 zombie doesn't have an option, so we go four ways to a flop, and the flop comes ace-king-jack with two spades, and I have king-10 with the 10 of spades. So I flop middle pair, a gut shot, and a backdoor flush draw. Both straddles check, and now the cutoff, who open-limped in, bets 55 into 80. And with my king-10 on ace-king-jack, I can absolutely call this bet, but I decide to go for a different route. I decide to go for the semi-bluff. And the reason I decide to go for the semi-bluff is because the cutoff really shouldn't have any strong hands here. The flop is ace, king, jack, and he just open limped in on the cutoffs. So he doesn't have pocket aces or pocket kings or pocket jacks or ace, king or ace, jack. Could he have king, jack offsuit? I mean, maybe, but I have a king. So it vastly decreases the chances that he's got that hand. And then I also have a 10 in my hand, making it less likely that he flopped the Broadway straight with queen 10. So when he bets, his most likely hands, considering his preflop actions and the card removal I have to some of the stronger hands, is that he's usually got an ace, like some sort of weak ace that he didn't raise with, like ace three suited or ace nine offsuit, something like that. Or he's got a lower spade draw, something like 6-5 of spades, 7-8 of spades, something like that. And then also he'll have some pair plus gutters, jack 10 or queen jack, something like that. And the cool thing about semi-bluff raising here is that his pair plus gutters and his lower flush draws usually continue, whereas his ace X, like his ace 8 or whatever, they usually fold out because they could just be drawing dead. So it's actually a really cool spot where I have his range pegged as weak. He really doesn't have many nutted hands on this board. And when I raise, the hands that are ahead of me, like those ace X, fold, and the hands that are behind me, those low flush draws and those pair plus draws, I'm actually ahead of those hands. And I'm not even that scared of the flush draws because I have a spade in my hand. So I have a redraw if a spade comes on the turn, but then also it's just less likely that a spade comes on the turn because there's one less in the deck because there's one in my hand. So I think this is actually a really good spot to attack. I raise to 175. It gets back to him and he thinks about it and he folds the hand. Hot damn. So this was not a big, cool, elaborate bluff, anything like that. But not all good bluffs are made that way. Some good bluffs are just seeing a spot and taking the spot. And this was a good example of kind of ranging your opponent to figure out he couldn't really have many nutted hands and attack him in position and take down a pot that otherwise I might lose if I just played it passively down to the river. So congratulations to me. That's hand one. Let's move on to hand two. All right, hand two. This hand comes from a 2-5 session at the California Grand Casino. There are four limps for $5, and it gets to me on the button, and I have king five of hearts. And with four limpers, I think ISO raising this hand is a little bit thin. And again, I'm on the button, so I'm going to get to play the hand with ultimate position regardless. So I overlimp for five. Both blinds call. And we do something that you only see in low stakes, no limit Texas Hold'em games. We go seven ways to a limped flop of King 10-7 with two spades and one heart. King 10-7, two spades, one heart. I have King 5 of hearts. So I flop a really weak top pair and a backdoor flush draw. The two blinds check, and now an old dude, one of the original limpers, the original limper under the gun, bets 15 into about 30. The cutoff calls and it gets to me. And usually when there's a bet and a call on King 10-7 when I have King 5, I'm usually not good here. Often one of these guys has a king that's better than me, but I do have the backdoor flush draw and it is just $15. So I decide to call and both blinds call as well. So five people put in 15 on the flop and I'm like, okay, I'm fucking done here. Like there's no way I'm good. And the turn comes the blankiest of blanks, an offsuit deuce. So King 10-7 on the flop with two spades and one heart. I have King 5 of hearts. And then an offsuit deuce on the turn. And now both blinds check and the original guy in early position checks. And it gets to the cutoff next to me who bets 60 into a pot of about 105. And this is a really interesting bet because if this guy had made a good hand on the flop, right? It's King 10-7 with two spades. If he had something like a set of sevens or a two pair, he's raising this all the time on such a wet, dynamic board with so many players in the pot, he's going to raise. So when he doesn't raise the flop and then this innocuous deuce falls on the turn and now he makes a solid bet, there's really only two kind of hands he can have. He can have a pretty solid king. So say he had something like King Jack on King 10-7. He's probably thinking that he has the best hand here once early position who led on the flop now checks. He could also have like a big spade draw and be trying to bluff his way into a victory here. But with four other players in the pot, you know, it kind of makes more sense if you have like a big spade draw, maybe a combo draw, something like, I think he'd probably get aggressive on the flop. So I think he's mostly weighted toward King X, and I don't beat King X, right? I have a five kicker. Yet, I decide maybe he can have some draws, and I make the call. I think this is actually a pretty optimistic call. I think just letting this hand go here is best, but, you know, I decide to make the call because, like I said, I think the guy was pretty capped on the flop at one pair, and so he shouldn't have anything better than one pair when the deuce falls on the turn. So I do make the call for 60, and everybody else folds. So we actually go heads up to a river, and the river is an offsuit ace. So king 10-7 on the flop with two spades, and then an offsuit deuce on the turn, and then an offsuit ace on the river. The cutoff is first to act, and now he makes a super small bet. He bets 40 into 220, less than one-fifth the size of the pot. And I look over at this guy's stack, and he's got about $400 in it. And I just decide, man, like the two hands that I thought this guy had on the turn were some sort of flush draw or King X. And now that this ace has fallen, neither of those hands like this card. Because if he's got a king, not only could I have some sort of ace, but I could also have Queen Jack that just made a Broadway straight. So I decide to turn my pair of kings into a bluff. So I bluff jam for a little less than 400, and he quickly folds. And this play kind of incorporated a little bit of a live hack. And the live hack is that if somebody makes a bet on one street and then on another street bets again, but bets smaller than the previous bet, like this guy bet 60 on the turn, and then he bet 40 on the river, he's got a fucking weak hand. Like 99% of the time, this signifies a weak hand. And I just decided to turn my pair of kings, which was almost certainly not good, into a bluff, and I got it through. So happy about this one. Congratulations to me. Allow myself to congratulate myself. Let's move on to hand three. Okay, hand three. This hand is also from 2-5 at the California Grand Casino, and it's again a multi-way limped pot. So this old dude under the gun limps for five. There's a serial limper in the hijack. That's like what he does with his life is just limp pots and try to hit the nuts. He limps in the hijack. I'm in the cutoff with Queen Jack offsuit, and I make it 25. And again, this is a situation pre-flop where I want to lean more toward raising when I'm not on the button because it's often going to buy me position, right? It's going to force the button to fold. Otherwise, he might limp in with a wide variety of hands, but it'll buy me position post-flop quite a bit and make the pot bigger against some weak players with weak hands. So I make it 25 with Queen Jack offsuit from the cutoff. And then after I waxed all this poetic about trying to buy position, the button cold calls my 25 and I don't get my position anyways. And then both limpers call. So we go four ways to a flop. I'm third to act. And the flop comes ace, king, six with two clubs. I have queen jack with the queen of clubs. So I flop okay. I flop a gutter to the nut straight. And then I also have the nut backdoor flush draw. Ace, king, six with the top two cards, clubs. I have queen, jack with the queen of clubs. Now this old dude under the gun who limped for five and then called my raise for 25, he leads for $25 into 100. The serial limper and the hijack folds and then it gets to me. And I think raising is kind of the only good option here. And the reason it's a good option is because this guy should never have any nutted hands on this board. It's ace, king, six. He should never have pocket aces or pocket kings or ace, king. And he probably doesn't have pocket sixes either because people don't lead for little bitch ass bets with sets. They try to check raise with them. And even if he did have a big hand, like say he just had like ace, six suited and flop top and bottom pair, even though there's only two combinations of that available, A, I think he'd check raise that quite a bit. But B, if he decided to lead it, on a board that has two clubs on it, a lot of times he's going to bet bigger than a quarter pot. So almost always when somebody donk leads with a really small sizing into you, especially multi-way, they're betting because they have a little piece of the board and they're trying to find out where they're at. This guy has like ace three suited or whatever, like always here. Meanwhile, I can have all the big hands because I was the pre-flop raiser. I can have aces on ace, king, six. I can have pocket kings. I can have ace, king, all that shit. And this guy doesn't. So instead of playing the hand passively and just calling behind and seeing if something develops on the turn, I decide to get aggressive, which again, I think is the only reasonable thing to do here. And I make it 130. The button behind me folds, and now the old dude under the gun who let out quickly calls. And when he quickly calls, I actually think this is somewhat of a good event, because if he did somehow have a big hand, he would at least think about what he should do. So he leads this flop for 25. I make it 130 and he calls, and the turn comes in offsuit eight, a complete blank. So ace, king, six on the flop, and then a complete blank and offsuit eight on the turn. He checks, and there's about 360 in the pot, and that's all he's got behind. He started the hand with about $500, so he's only got about 360 left. And I decide to ship it all in, and he snap folds. So again, kind of like hand one, a really good example of just an opponent being capped, whereas you're uncapped, and you put the fucking screws to him, and you take the pot instead of being passive and calling along and seeing if your hand develops into something. You know, these are the situations where you can really apply a lot of force and win your unfair share of pots in hands where you have some equity, but really relying on just calling down and actually making a hand is not going to be profitable. But just stealing a pot from weak ass players' hands is way profitable. So that's what I did here. Let's do it once more in hand four. All right, last hand, hand four. This comes from 5-10 at Stones. A very loose, passive, recreational lady limps for 10 under the gun. It folds around to me in the cutoff, and I have pocket fours, and I make it $50. Hate to keep being repetitive, but again, when I'm not on the button, I'm much more inclined to raise and isolate, et cetera, et cetera. And this lady, like I said, I've been playing with her like an hour or two. She's just very loose, passive, right? She's like the players you see in live no limit games all the time, where they try to limp in and they'll limp with hands that they want to call one raise with, try to hit a flop and make the nuts. And that's how they think that they're going to make money. I love these players. They're my favorite types of players to play against because you can steal so many pots from them. And that's what I'm about to do to this lady right here. So she limps for 10. I'm in the cutoff with black fours. I raise to 50 and she calls. We go heads up to a flop of Jack, Jack, seven with two diamonds. Jack, Jack, seven, two diamonds. I have pocket fours. She checks, and there's a little more than 100, maybe like 110-ish in the pot. And I go about a third, I bet 40 on Jack, Jack, seven. And this is not necessarily designed to get rid of any good hands, but those loose like Ace X or King X hands like Ace three or King 10, hands like those, that actually have pretty decent equity against pocket fours if we make it to the river. Those are the hands I want to get her to auto fold. And because I'm only betting a third of the pot, it doesn't have to work that often for this bet to be profitable. So I see bet 40 and she makes the call. The turn comes a pretty bad card for me. It comes the ace of diamonds, putting a third diamond on board. So Jack, Jack, seven, two diamonds on the flop. She check calls. And then an ace of diamonds on the turn. She checks, and with my black fours, now it's time to just give it up. Yes, possibly she has a hand that I can get her off of, maybe a hand like pocket eights or pocket fives or something like that. I can bet and get her off those hands. But a big portion of her range is going to be comprised of some jack X that are traps and then some flush draws that just made a flush. So yes, she will have some junky hands in there, but the reality is I just don't have a very equity-driven hand as well. A lot of the times when you make bluffs, you'd like to have bluffs that can, if called, actually make a hand as a backup. My hand has two fucking outs, like no way. So I just decide to give it up here, and I check back, and then the river comes a really interesting card. It comes another ace. So Jack, Jack, seven with two diamonds on the flop. I check and she calls. The turn comes the ace of diamonds, putting a third diamond on board. We both check. And then the turn pairs the ace. So it's Jack, Jack, seven, ace, ace. Now she does something interesting. She leads for 80 into a pot of about 200. And when a loose passive player starts making solid bets, a lot of the times it's time to fold because they have something they kind of like. But in this case, that's kind of all she can have is a hand that she kind of likes, because she shouldn't really have an ace in her hand. And an ace is the essential nuts, right? She just limp called preflop. So that means that she almost never has a really good ace, like ace king, ace queen, hands like that. She'd open those hands. And then when she check calls the bet on the flop, she's getting rid of a lot of her junky ace hands on jack, jack seven. She's just giving up with like ace three of hearts or whatever it is. So she really shouldn't have an ace here. A lot of the time she does have a slow played jack that kind of ran into a bad run out and turned into a second best full house. And then sometimes she's got flushes and is just trying to get thin value for those. Meanwhile, it's very, very credible that I have an ace. I raise preflop, I c-bet the flop, then an ace hit on the turn, and I decided not to keep betting because I'm trying to exercise some sort of pot control, which I just might do with a hand like ace 10 or ace jack. And then when another ace comes, she bets, and if I raise the river, man, that's just what I'd do with an ace. So I decide to do it. She leads out 480, and I make it 350. So that's about 4.5 times her lead, and I make it about that size because I really want to target Jack X. I really want Jack X to fold. So I make it 350, and she thinks about it for a little while, and she makes the fold, and Daddy gets it through. Hot damn. All right, my friends. You know, like I said last week, these were all bad hands. This week, they were all good hands, little bluffs that got through. And, you know, some bluffs are like these big three bet and then multi-street, multi-barrel, like all-in bluffs by the end. And I think those are really fun too. But a lot of the best bluffs and the bluffs you see more often are going to be bluffs in these medium-sized pots where if you pick up a couple hundred bucks here and a couple hundred bucks there, it ends up really adding a lot of money to your win rate. And I think one of the common themes throughout the hands here is that I picked up on the capped range that my opponents could have. In essence, my opponents couldn't have the top end of value in these spots, whereas I credibly could. And so when that situation arises and you can recognize it, you can really wield that like a mace and smash your opponents into oblivion. So that's what we did a couple times in these hands. We do, in fact, love to see it. Like I said, next week will be the mailbag episode. So again, if you guys have any discussion points, questions, et cetera, please DM me on Twitter at SammyReedFI. Thank you as always for tuning in. I appreciate you guys. And until next week, my friends, play good and run pure.